hello, and welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host, Casey Ruff, and today we have another amazing guest introduced to you now. Mimi Morgan grew up in Kentucky, where despite developing asthma at age 2, she spent lots of time outdoors taking care of and riding horses. Despite that diagnosis of asthma from a young age, Mimi was always adventuresome. She hiked, kayaked, dog sledded, and loved the outdoors in general. Unfortunately, her low-fat, low-protein way of eating ultimately brought about some serious health issues. Eventually, she was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis and Parkinson's disease. Shortly thereafter, she was diagnosed with spinal osteomyelitis, and her health was steadily declining. It was not until she finally reduced her carbohydrates and increased her protein and fat that she began to see some pretty amazing results. Over time, she was even able to reduce her medications from 13 to 0. Wow. She has now shared her story on several major podcasts, including the Dr. Sean Baker podcast, Fitness Confidential with Vinny Tortorich, Off of the Couch with Maggie Stewart, and Carnivorous Chats with James Lehman, all of which are former guests of our show. You can find Mimi on social media on Twitter at Mimi K. Morgan and on Instagram at Mimi K. Morgan. Mimi Morgan, what an absolute honor it is to welcome you to Boundless Body Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Casey.
It's such an honor to host you. I have a question for you right off the bat. As I was researching you, and I was looking up your bio and trying to put that together. I searched Mimi Morgan bio. The first thing that popped up was an actress who had also starred back in, I think, like the 70s and 80s in some certain like adult film productions. Is that you?
No, it's not me. And actually, Mimi is not my real name. That's the and I've seen that too when I googled Mimi Morgan. That's what my grandsons affectionately call me.
That's funny.
And so I just used it when I was on Twitter and it stuck. And so every time somebody calls me Mimi, it has that same feeling of affection that my grandsons would call me. So no, yeah, it was. I'm not the adult porn star.
Okay. I won't find you in any like CD video aisles of my local video rental.
No, nothing. Not even if you search my home.
Got it. Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way. I hope I didn't give away too much about your story in the introduction. It's been really fun to see you kind of emerge here in the low carbohydrate space and start to share your story. I could understand why you wouldn't want to do that, because you've really gone through the ringer and come out the other side. And, you know, probably a lot of recounting unpleasant memories for you must be very difficult, but certainly we're grateful that you're willing to do that. And I do have to say as well, like today we're recording on a pretty special day, in my opinion. We're recording on February 29th, and we don't get February 29th, obviously, every year. This year is a leap year. Right. And I've been thinking about your story and this day that we have. And I don't know, to me, it's something really cool that every single 24-hour day, we actually save up a few extra seconds, a handful of seconds that eventually, after 4 years, gives us this day that I almost consider like this special, like extra bonus day that we get. And I think about you and your story and how you suffered and might not have ever made it to this age, yet you have this new, fresh, you know, this fresh outlook on life, like a fresh day, like a leap year day. So I think this is a perfect day to record.
Yeah, thank you. No, it is. And, you know, if things hadn't changed, I might not have been here today to share any kind of story, let alone a story of healing. I really was failing that fast. And my family was already talking about, at this point, you know, possibly putting me in a home, because I really was not doing well. So, and time is our most precious thing. So that I'm grateful that we have an extra day this year, and it's good to be here.
Yeah, that's excellent. Why don't we start with you recounting? Let's start from your childhood. The asthma diagnosis was very young. I was surprised to see that it was diagnosed that young. But can you tell us what it was like to grow up to equally want to be outside and active and doing so many different things, but also already struggling at such a young age with an autoimmune condition?
Yeah, and so actually, I wish it was Kentucky. I spent some time in Kentucky with horses. I grew up in northern New Jersey. Not Kentucky, but, and I grew up in the country, and actually it's my first memory of trying to swallow pills at 2 years of age, which is pretty hard for a 2-year-old to grasp that concept, but I had pretty severe asthma, and it was hard because I just naturally loved playing outdoors, and then being in the country, it was difficult, and back then asthma was treated much differently than now. Back then it was really bed rest, you know, as soon as you started wheezing, you had to lie down. And the medications weren't particularly good. And that actually made things worse. So it was difficult. I was on the sidelines of PE for my whole childhood. It wasn't until I got into eighth grade or freshman year where I was allowed to take PE. So I was on the sidelines. And that's pretty difficult as far as, you know, making friends. And we had recess back then where we ran around and played outside. And even though I would do that, that would result usually in an asthma attack. And so I tried to limit it. So it was actually pretty difficult for me. It wasn't until we had moved my junior, or middle school, not junior, and I was in seventh grade, sixth grade, and I met a friend and she had horses. And it was my first contact with horses. And I absolutely fell in love with them. I share a cute story with my dad about when I came home wanting a horse. And I eventually got one. I eventually rode, spent a lot of time in the barn, and I outgrew my asthma, which really tells you a lot about what I should have been doing my whole childhood, was just being exposed and developing stronger lungs rather than keeping them weak by not exercising. But I had other than that, I had a nice childhood, loving parents, and rode horses and was very successful. You know, here I was, this kid that couldn't play and do anything, and I ended up being nationally ranked and showing in the eighth circuit. And it was really empowering, really good for me. It was the first thing that I had really done well at, and horses are pretty amazing animals. And you know, you've got a couple thousand pounds under you, and I just absolutely clicked. And you know, it was pretty empowering for a young girl that couldn't do much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that and that became my, you know, my whole middle school, whole teens going through college was really dedicated to riding. I was at the barn any free moment I had from studying, and you know, just went on, got married, had three children, lived a relatively, you know, normal life, healthy life, pretty plant based. Ate very little beef, even though I grew up with that. So we grew up with a root cellar and going down with having the smoked beef and the ham and everything. I remember going down and getting the slab of bacon, and we ate well. And that was really on my side, that my mother was a homemaker and food wasn't processed. And that helped me. But still, I didn't eat, as I got older, I didn't eat a lot of beef and I didn't eat a lot of protein. And of course, things started to catch up on me.
Yeah. So was that on purpose? Were you not eating beef because we were told that it was unhealthy even back then?
Yeah, I definitely think I got the message then. I don't know that I was a big meat eater back then. You'd never know it now. Maybe a little chicken, some fish. You know, I've been slim the majority of my life. Had a little trouble getting weight off when I was pregnant. But slim and just mindful. And yes, you know, you hear these stories and it's in the back of your head. I wasn't worried about heart disease or things like that. I really was worried about fat will get you fat. You know, which I think everybody did. And I remember my mom even being mindful about how much fat she ate. And eventually it caught up to me and my health, and was busy overworking. I was a stay-at-home mom, then ended up having a career when my youngest went off to college. And menopause hit me tough. I did not handle it well. Hormones don't work for me, so I had a tough time riding through it, especially on my diet. And eventually overworking, everything else caught up with me in my late 50s. And that's where my body started to really attack itself, and just one thing after another.
Yeah. Wow. I was going to ask you when that started to catch up. In hindsight, can you see, could you see maybe not like serious diagnoses, but could you see patterns or things that were kind of leading up to it as you look back on it today?
I do. So I weight trained when I was in my 40s, was still really active, still really wasn't working then. And was in pretty good health, you know, and was pretty fit. Did a lot of weight training, biked 125 miles a week, ran, you know, 3 to 5 miles every day, or walked. and did weight training. So I was pretty fit and felt healthy. I think when I gave all that up and just was working that grind 16, 18 hours at a time where not a good time as I'm going through a lot of changes definitely hit me. So if I could back up, I would back up. Well, I'd back up way further, but definitely I could see that I could have, things would have been much different if I had stuck with what I did in my late 40s, especially with weight training.
Yeah, that strength training is so important. Okay, so let's get to the point of like when the serious stuff really started to hit.
So early 60s, late 50s, first diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. Then 2 years, actually to the month, Parkinson's disease. Had a lot of unusual symptoms that were suggestive of one of the more advanced versions. And it hit me hard. I started to have some cognitive failure. I mean, everything was just falling apart all around me. The only specialist I didn't have was a kidney specialist. Other than that, it was every 3 months I'm seeing the specialist for something else. And of course, some medications getting piled on. And that's making me sicker. The Parkinson's medication I had a hard time dealing with. It can cause a lot of nausea. And unfortunately, anti-nausea medicine doesn't work for Parkinson's patients. It can cause some psychosis and some mental problems. So, you know, that's limited about what your options, even Farinogen isn't even allowed. So, you know, then my diet became worse with, you know, graham crackers, bananas, and saltines, which, you know, I never ate because I grew up being a good eater. But it was about the only thing I could keep down with the pills and to help with the nausea. And of course, that made it worse. The medicine competes with in the gut. So definitely it was a low protein, high carb diet, a little bit of protein at night. And I mean, it just, everything that I did just kept getting me sicker. And I'm about 2 years into that, did some rock steady boxing. Emotionally and mentally, that was really difficult because I'm seeing people that were, you know, 2 years down the road, 5, 10 years down the road. So, and there's no cure for Parkinson's. I'm looking at where I'm going to end up. And I had a hard time with that because I just did. I wish I didn't, but I did. And I stopped doing that. But anyway, one day I walked 4 miles. It was an accident, and I had a good day. Sat on the bench to catch some sun. It was actually February 7th, 5 years ago, and I had a stroke. And got through the stroke pretty good, but was unfortunately infected with, at the time, with Staph A, later became MRSA, but it was infected through the IV and was not treated right. And released with a PICC line, and that's where, and with the wrong antibiotic, the antibiotic that wasn't working when I was in the hospital for the second time after the stroke, and it was a medium-sized stroke, that it spread to my spine. And that really is the worst of this whole story, because it was in my canal in an abscess, and if it had burst, it would have gone to my brain and killed me, and antibiotics took 6 months to actually destroy that abscess, but it sped through my muscles, particularly my psoas, ate some of my vertebrae and the disc, and I just was in pretty rough shape, was hospitalized for about 2 months, and then sent home, was sent to rehab for 3 weeks, and came home for a walker. So that ended. I went in for the first stroke February 7th, and I got home April 24th.
Wow. It's a long time.
Yeah, and it's a long time and a lot of complications there. And that's a tough time to be, you know, bedridden, except for when I could walk with a walker. And I was quite ill. I had to have emergency surgery in the middle of the night for them to kill the bacteria that was running through me. And, you know, came home with a walker and actually I didn't come home. I couldn't because I had a townhouse with 27. That's why I'm so proud. If you are on my site and see, I post a lot about stairs and people think I'm nuts running up and down the stairs. And now my trainer has me running up with a 20-pound vest on. It's not a fast run, but it's definitely more than a walk. But I couldn't go to my home that had 27 steps because they said I'd never walk up 27 steps again. So I had to move in with my daughter and son-in-law. And I had 5 steps that I had somebody come from home health to help me manage those. But I never went back to my place. They moved me out of my, I had a 3-story townhouse, and they moved me out of that knowing that I never could walk it. So now that I can, I run them just to say I'm going to do it.
Good for you. That's amazing. Wow. Okay. So a bunch of serious diagnoses. I wanted to ask you specifically about the Parkinson's. That to me is pretty serious. And I've seen that progress with most people and it's not great. What symptoms were you expressing before you got that diagnosis?
So my first, I had a little cognitive issue, which is kind of not typical of the beginning. I couldn't swing my left arm. I started to drag. So I was dominant. Parkinson's typically starts on one side and then it moves to the other. A few years later, I was definitely the left side. Not swinging my arm was one. Dragging my leg a little bit. I was having a lot of falls and that was a little part of it. My foot was catching and dragging. Slowness of movement. I had my girls noticed masking, and that's where you lose your facial expression. You think you're smiling, you think you're laughing, and there's no expression there. And my girls noticed that first off was what they noticed. Definitely falls. Having some autonomic symptoms. My sleep was disrupted. There was just something off. And first they thought epilepsy because I had a couple seizure-like episodes, not knowing where I was. And that ended up actually being a side effect from one of the rheumatoid arthritis drugs that I was on was causing those episodes. And so that's what my symptoms were. And I was diagnosed with it for 6 years before I finally, and I definitely had some form of Parkinsonism. A lot of people get confused and think, there are many forms of Parkinsonism, including the plus. And a year into my diagnosis, they slated me as having potential multiple system atrophy, which is one of the more deadly ones. And it looks the same for the first 5 years as Parkinson's. And then after 5 years, it branches off and, you've got another 3 years, maybe 5, with a real fast downward spiral with it. But I had neurogenic bladder, and that was probably the big sign for them. That's not a typical early stage Parkinson's issue, but my brain would, I drink a sip of water and my brain would tell, my bladder would think it's full and it wasn't. And that's where you're not getting the message. And I had a sleep disturbance. And then I also had a lot of off symptoms early on, which meant the medication wasn't working. It did help, which aided in their diagnosis of Parkinson's, but it didn't work really well. So I was up to, typically, somebody early stage might take a couple 100 milligrams a day, spread throughout the day, no big deal. Sometimes they don't even need any medication. I was on 1,200 milligrams a day just to function. Wow. Every 3.5 hours. And of course, you can't eat. You can eat a little carbohydrate, but you can't eat, 45 minutes, half an hour before and 45 minutes after a 3.5 hour window before you're taking your next dose. So that's where I would reserve my little fistful of protein at night. I maybe had 4 6-ounces of protein, and that was it for years, and no fat.
Wow. As you're telling this story, are you even talking about yourself? Like,
no.
Can you believe you are talking about you?
No, and that's a great question, because I think that sometimes, and nobody's asked me that. No, I have, at this point, no. It's like somebody else. And even my family will look at me and think, you're somebody else. And I mean, and I wish I had more photos. And it's like, it's not even me. Because I could barely get around with a cane. my movement was slow. My cognitive was slow. I mean, it's just like, no, I it's really hard for me to believe that that's what my that I'm talking about me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a different story if it's your family, because they were with you through all that time. I only know current Mimi, who's basically like juggling kettlebells and running upstairs with weighted vests and like doing all this amazing stuff and sending inspiring messages. Like, to hear the depths of where you were, that would be really kind of quite strange to think that that was you and you experienced all of that.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it was really, I was really sick. And when you're that sick and that with that many medications, I don't want to say I was a zombie, but I might've been a little bit of a zombie. And none of them were I'm not saying there's anything wrong, but none of them were for any depression or anything like that. We're just talking about medications, you know, to help get me through the day, you know, and not your typical medications. And I really kind of maybe was a zombie, you know, getting up I live a full active day, like you said. And, you know, there are days where most of the time I'd have to take my medication before I'd even step a foot out of the bed, because otherwise I wasn't getting out of bed. My movement was just so slow. And it's painful, because you have stiffness, and then of course RA is painful, and you get weighted down when you physically hurt that much. My pain level was 6 or 7, and probably higher for most. I'm pretty pain tolerant. And, you know, rolling over from one side of me in bed would take 10 minutes, you know, because it was exhausting, and I had to do it in stages. So I had to sit to shower I had to sit to shower to wash my hair. I didn't even have the strength to stand up.
Wow.
I was that weak and that sick.
Wow. Well, I've had the opportunity to host both Dr. Chris Palmer and both, and also Dr. Georgia Ead. Both are authors of amazing books about mental health, and asking them what would be an expected, like, kind of good story before they discovered like metabolic health and how to like really help people with mental health issues in particular. Obviously, you have lots more going on just besides that, but like a good win before would have been something like, we find a medication that this person can like kind of manage and maybe like not lose their job, and that might only work for a limited amount of time, maybe 6 months, 12 months, or there's going to be all these terrible side effects they have to deal with, versus what they do now, again, with metabolic therapy is completely different. But I mean, the best case scenarios with some of these diagnoses, according to the medical system, it's pretty dire, pretty crappy, and a terrible kind of quality of life, like while you're waiting to see if anything's going to improve anyway. Terrible.
Right. Yeah. Well, absolutely. And, you know, my family was sure I was depressed. I went through extensive testing. Parkinson's is unlike really anything else, in that you spend hours and sometimes days inside a clinic with a team of doctors looking at you, assessing you. And I had been actually diagnosed by 3 of the top 12 centers in the U.S. we went to.
Wow.
And so, you know, I really had great care. I had a lot of assessment. I had 2 batteries of cognitive testing. My family was sure I'm not moving because I was depressed. And they tried medication on me, which just made me worse. And, you know, I had the tests and he says, you're not depressed. He said, you know, you're just as part of the, because you don't get the messages the same. So people with Parkinson's don't have that, and I forget what the name is called, but they don't register pleasure the same. So when you do something, so if you're out, you know, running and you feel good, you get those endorphins, well, you want to go back and run again. Well, for people with Parkinson's or neuro disease in that family, well, they might get the pleasure, but then it's all forgotten the next day.
Wow.
So there's no sort of reward. So it's really hard then to get to do something, because you don't have a memory in your body of that reward system.
Wow.
But yeah, it's only a medication to mask the symptoms, nothing to treat it, except for, which I find really fascinating now, and I see a lot of people with Parkinson's, I work at the senior center, is exercise. Every doctor and I probably saw 8 doctors in all these teams, said the best thing you can do before you take your medication is exercise is your best medication. So that, I mean, that makes me really pause and think about, well, why isn't that thought about across the board in all medical fields? But that's the one thing that can slow or treat the symptoms better than actually medication, especially when you're early on.
Interesting. One of my clients, his mother has moved on, but she was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and he hired another mutual friend of ours who's a personal trainer, and he wisely would show up to this woman's house and put a record on the record player, and they would just dance. It wasn't a personal trainer to actually do what we consider exercise. It was movement. It was
right.
It was a form of exercise, and I would say a very highly coordinated and natural movement, which would be dance. And so, it definitely helped. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And so you wonder why isn't it used across the board for everything. And even as a form of prevention.
Cause it's free. That's why.
Right. That's right.
Doctor doesn't make money on that. Okay. So
no, they don't.
I don't think we're to the good part of the story just yet. Right. You still had a few other things that you were suffering with.
No. So, I had a lot of sleep disturbances that just made things worse. Neuro-related dystonia, which is very painful, where your limbs seize up in all sorts of odd shapes. And that was part of it. But no, I came home and I did physical therapy 3 times a week. I had home health care with a walker. Got rid of the walker about 6 months after and went to Kane. And did that for almost about 15 months. And it was at that point they said, okay, it's not going to get any better with physical therapy. You're just going to have to accept that this is where you are. And, you know, I was on occasionally, maybe twice a month, I could get a quarter mile, but it set me back for 4 or 5 days. I'd be in such pain. I couldn't move. So I really was where I was at that point, almost 2 years into it, or a year and a half, was as I could walk a few blocks and was really still on antibiotics. The infection was that bad. They said I'd have to be on life, and they thought I had a good chance of it coming back and I probably wouldn't beat it next time. I had too many things wrong with me and my body. I say, 50% and actually Dr. Baker says, I would have given you a whole lot less chance of surviving it. It does have a tendency to come back. It encapsulates in your body and hides and waits for an opportune moment. Wow. And so it's pretty dismal. And then I had my aha moment.
let's hear the aha moment. This is a good time for some good news here.
Good news. So, I was walking and I get to this mail. It's my mailbox story. I was walking, got a couple blocks and I passed this mailbox and it was pretty much the turning point where my body had enough. And one day I looked at it and I was like, I'm done. I just let this take me. I had no fight left in me. I just didn't. And I was just over it. And I turn around in absolute defeat. And I hear a message. And it's, okay, so you can't walk where you want to walk. What do you have in you? And I stopped and I scanned my body, probably for the first time in years. And I said, I have 10 steps, kind of shrugging my shoulders. So I turned around and I walked 10 steps and I went home. And I thought nothing of it. Because I just, my mind was almost in a fog and I thought nothing of it. I went back and got to the mailbox and 10 more steps. And I stopped and asked myself that question and did 10 more steps. And I did that every day for months. And I would say within 9 to 12 months later, I had walked over 1 mile, whereas I couldn't get anywhere for the first year and a half. Wow. Forcing myself to do something. I just couldn't get anywhere, but those 10 steps carried me. And a few months, I had you know, obviously I now I'm eating a hard carb and I'm barely moving, and I had put on some weight. And I, about 3 months after my 10 step journey, I went across the street to somebody who was a chiropractor. He had a diet clinic, but he had a different approach than everybody else. And I came with my bag of medicine and my list of all my ailments. And he spent an hour and a half with me. And that's where he said, you know, all right, I'm going to want you to do something that's contrary to what you're doing. Are you going to trust me? And I said, sure, without knowing what he was going to say. And that's where he said, I want you to eat 50% fat, 25% protein, 25 carbs. That's how I went. And I was like, whoa, okay. One, my medicine's not going to work and I can't afford to do that. And number two, you're going to make me fat and I want to lose weight. So, you know, he talked with me a little bit more and I was like, okay, I'll give it a try at this point, you know, because I really was not feeling well. And I didn't want to go back to the doctors because they were just going to give me another medication. I'm already on 13 plus and, you know, I'm just being really poisoned with all, really on some strong medications. And I had an app to help me manage them. I mean, it was just every hour and a half I was taking some medication for something else.
Wild. Wow.
And it was like 50 pills a day or something ridiculous. Plus, you know, I had injections and it was just, I get for 3 months, I get my Parkinson's, I get a bottle of 900 pills.
Whoa.
Every 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the pharmacist would just, and that was just the one medication. And that didn't even include the nighttime dosage that I had to take. That was another 90. But, so I did that and I, you know, I would say in about 3 months, a month, I wasn't feeling worse, which was positive. And about 3 months, I started to feel better eating this way. I mean, I don't know if I had 50% of a day's worth of diet worth of fat in a month previous. And my body was absolutely craving it. And, you know, I just slowly but surely just started getting better and better. And it was about 6 to 9 months in, I said, can I cut my carbs a little bit more? You know, I don't want them. And they were healthy carbs. It was clean keto, what I did. It wasn't, you know, packaged or junk food. You know, it might have been a sweet potato or a dried, you know, I might do a plantain on one day, but it was good, you know, nutritious food. I started to eat at steak more. I started to crave steak more. Started to want the whole steak. I started to want to eat the whole fat naturally. And then was when my fat got up to 70, 80% that I noticed that my neurosymptoms were getting better. And that's where, and that's 6 months, 6, 9 months down the road. And that's where the light bulb went off in my head.
Wow, that's amazing. When you go back, you say you were doing quote unquote clean keto. Did you know at the time you were doing clean keto, or were you just kind of following the chiropractor's kind of recommendations to just have more fat?
Yeah, I was just doing that to get my 50% fat. And then, you know, I started to, because I'm starting to feel better. He started to send me info and said, you know, how about, why don't you start? I had eliminated nightshades. And of course, I wasn't doing gluten. I hadn't been doing that either because of the RA. That I started to then explore a little bit more keto and realize it was. But yeah, you know, I eat healthy. So that was kind of the natural part. So at first, no, I wasn't aware that it had a name, keto. Eventually it did. And I definitely, by the time that I was 70, 80% fat, that I noticed a huge change with my neuro, including my cognitive was improving. I started to notice I didn't need to take my pills every 3.5 hours. Normally, I could tell you within the minute it was time to take the pills because I could feel my body starting to slow down and the medication wearing down. And now I'm getting a 4, 4.5 hours, which was pretty miraculous. And I was like, I don't need to take a dose, and you know, yet. And that really was my light bulb moment where I connected everything, you know, and I realized, oh, wow. I'm healing, and I'm not sure, well, what I have wrong with me, and That's where I started to feel helpful. Wow. And then I just ran with it.
That's amazing. It's so interesting to hear. I think this is true with males and females, but in particular females, as they start eating this way and they start coming around to the idea that they might need more protein, they might need more fat. It's difficult in the beginning, and the fat that they have might be like a smidge of olive oil with a little bit of avocado, and then the protein might be a little bit of fish, a little bit of chicken, and then maybe it's like this little dabble into red meat, and then it's maybe just a little bit more red meat. And the way that turns into this ravenous craving with most people is so fascinating. Fascinating. It's so interesting. And it takes a few months. It's gradual, but I see it all the time, in particular with women.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I had to go, I went to Whole Foods. I actually get my beef from a regenerative farmer called Independence Arc, which I absolutely love. But I'm low right now. I'm waiting for some to come. And I had to go up to Whole Foods. And so I said, oh, I was buying the Terre Major steak, and I bought some other steak, and then I bought, I said, I want all grass-fed beef. You know, I have 10 pounds. He said, you're stocking up. I'm like, no, this is for the week. I eat a pound and a half beef a day.
Good for you.
And he just looked at me, but it's like, yeah, you know, it's just what my body craves, you know, and I eat the fat with it.
And it's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah, wow. It really is.
Good for you. As you're going on this journey and things are starting to improve, and you're again, improving, like, what are the doctors saying? Is anybody curious about what's going on? Like, have they noticed this in the past with other people? Are you very unique? Were they, you know, lining up to hear, like, what are you doing? We're so interested, or any of that?
Oh, I wish. The best reaction was from my Parkinson's physician who I did like, was curious and wanted to write it down. You know, I didn't want a big fight, so I didn't tell them 100% what was going on. They all said, wow, you're looking good. And my Parkinson's doctor was like, wow, you're improving. And I told her, you know, I didn't tell her how much, but I said, and she did write, I watched her write a note. I'm eating protein and I'm adding more fat in my diet. And she said, how much? And I told her, she wrote it down. You know, they're pretty good because, you know, it's an interesting discipline. They actually really encourage you to take control of your medication, so you have a lot of leeway and a lot of play. And so she wasn't discouraging. She was a new one from when I first started. My infectious disease doctor thought I looked great. He didn't want to hear a thing. I even started to tell him and he didn't want to hear anything. And the rest of the doctors didn't want to hear a thing. You know, here I'm walking in, desk door hunched over. I looked 80. I really do wish I had pictures. I looked 80. It just pained my children to look at me, how sick I looked and how aging in front of them I was. You know, and then here I come in, you know, vibrant, fit, healthy. You know, you get the glow because you're eating the meat and I'm getting sun and I'm doing all these other things and my spirits are soaring and they don't want to know.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is maybe a good time for a listener question. The appointment that I had right before you, I was training somebody virtually. She found us through, I believe, the Low Carb MD podcast. And I was telling her about you and your story and everything. And she said, will you ask her something for me? I said, of course I will. And she said, why is it so hard to share our message? Why do we feel insane when we want to tell people about it? Like, I feel like all of us have really, really good intentions. And whether it's the doctors, whether it's our neighbors, our friends and family, whether it's the person checking my receipt at Costco when I'm walking out of Costco with only fat and protein and animal fat and protein, I want to, like, share this message. And so does she. And she's getting strong and she's aging and her friends are doing plant-based and they're breaking down and she wants to help. But anytime she says something, it's like you think, like, you would think you're nuts. You know what I mean? Like, what would you say to
that? Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I get that all the time, And even my family sometimes will look at me like, okay, you're carrying this on too far. And my attitude is, well, this got me well. Why would I change it? I mean, I'm getting healthier and healthier. You know, people are brainwashed. They're brainwashed on television. We're brainwashed to accept that medication the medication has its place. Certainly the heroic method, you know, methods and the antibiotics and everything else saved my life. And the GPA that I got from the stroke saved my life. So it certainly has its place. I don't believe it heals. I do believe that what we get from nature is what heals us. But we're not taught that. We're taught, and we're also taught as we're older, that we need to accept medication more and more. I hear it out of my friend's mouth. Well, that's just part of getting older, one more medication. We're also trained that for a lot of reasons, and a lot that I feel are sinister, where that beef and meat is bad, you know, plant-based, which just, you know, maybe some people thrive. It just absolutely destroyed my health. And, you know, we're trained to accept what doctors have to say without question. That's another one. And they're trained to tell us that plant-based. I never, at 10, 15 physicians, none of them ever suggested I do anything close to keto or carnivore. It was all plant-based. You know, vegan, cut the dairy, do this, get stricter and stricter. None of them ever brought the other. And I think this system, you know, I like to say my new favorite saying is live by nature, not the system. Mm. And I think the system is designed against us.
Yeah.
Well, and I hate to say it, but I do believe it is.
I think you're right. I really think you're right. It's unfortunate to have this attitude about the system. We'd like to think that people are taking care of us, but these are multi-trillion dollar industries that just grew way too big for their britches, and they are not incentivized for us to be healthy. We have to break outside of that, which you have done. I believe currently you are, like we said, the introduction, maintaining zero medications. You were able to get deprescribed on everything. How do you, what is a normal day of a diet like for you now? Do you associate mostly with carnivore?
I associate with carnivore. You know, for me, that includes some fish. So I had a bone broth with a little beef in it. I usually have that as my first meal. And I'm actually, after this, going to go meet somebody, and we're going to have oysters. So I'll do that, but typically it'll be some beef or fish at night, a little bit of bacon, definitely butter. I'll have some kimchi. Dairy doesn't work for me, though I keep trying it, and it doesn't, you know, fermented kefir would make, or a little bit of yogurt once in a while, I'd be happy. But I keep it pretty streamlined, no vegetables. I do live a normal life, so if I go out and I'm not going to order a salad, I'm going to order the beef, and I usually pass on the vegetable. I might have clams, it might have a little tomatoes in it. I usually avoid any kind of a nightshade. But I live life if I travel. I might have pasta if I'm in Italy or somebody's made it homemade. But that's a really rare thing. Basically, it's just beef and then eggs. So I'll have a couple eggs a day. So I'm, you know, and keep it really simple. I just do better that way. And so I'm not going to add, again, I'm just not going to add things that hurt me and affect it.
Yeah, me too. If a meal for me is steak, eggs, maybe some bacon or something, it's just easy to have those one ingredients and not add a whole lot of like hullabaloo to it. So obviously you're very highly motivated by eating the right way, because if you don't, you're going to suffer. Some of these things might come back.
Right.
So obviously that's going to motivate you, but you know, we could say that you're eating a very, very restrictive diet by eating carnivore. Do you find yourself suffering eating this diet, and you do it just because you don't want to be sick again, or are you actually loving your food and it's helping you with your healing?
I'm loving my food. You know, I've really gotten into braising, so it's not all steak. I posted oxtails that I had done. I do a lot of braising. Oh, there's so much you can do with beef. It's just so good. You know, I get a lot of pleasure from food. I love to cook. I'm a good cook, but it's fuel for my body. And it just, I get a lot of pleasure out of cooking something that I know that's for my well-being. And I absolutely do never feel deprived. No, I was deprived before. I was deprived of the nutrients that my body needed. And you know, the first couple of weeks when you're getting off of carbs or whatever is a little tough, and you know, after that, you're just intuitively, your body just doesn't crave it. It's just really that simple. You know, if you cheat and have something, you might, but I don't think it's a natural craving for the nutrients. And now I feel my body craves, you know, the nutrients. And some days it's more fat, especially if I work out.
Yeah.
I need that. So no, I never, I get asked that, don't you feel deprived? I said, no.
Absolutely not. I can eat this for the rest of
my life. I'm eating the best beef from a small farmer too.
Excellent.
I don't think it costs more. Well, since I was so sick, I made a decision that I was going to get the best quality food, and maybe somebody who's well is just trying to trim down is fine with a grocery store. But for me, I needed every edge that I could get.
Yeah.
I find it richer, so I don't eat as much as I would.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, and I have zero waste. I can't tell you the last time, Casey, I threw something out of the refrigerator because it went bad.
Yeah, I talk about that all the time. Every week I take my recycling out to the street to get taken out. It goes maybe like 4, 5, 6 weeks before I take out the trash, where I know in the past when I was not eating carnivore, I was taking both out every week. Like, that's a pretty big difference.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, something would go bad. I'm not sure where you are. I'm in the South, but you know, even in the refrigerator, the warm weather, things go bad, and yeah, just waste.
Yep.
And I have none.
Yeah. So much better. Yeah. We noticed that the two. Okay. Another lifestyle factor I was really curious to talk to you about. I do this selfishly because I am a personal trainer along with being a nutrition coach. Right. And so I love training people. Really, really, really wish more people, even in the short term, would consider hiring a personal trainer just to help them get going and learn a few things. You're going to be our best marketing person. I'll send you a spiff for anybody that ends up hiring me. I'll give you $20. I'll send to you in the mail.
No.
Can you tell us about your experience about wanting to do strength training, get back into strength training again, but the importance of also considering hiring a professional?
Yeah. So I consider that, you know, first I had to, you know, my walking, which kind of helped me mentally, and then my diet, and then the next most important decision, and literally the best money that I spend is on a personal trainer. And I'm coming up, it'd be 2 years in April that I worked with her. My father was ill and came home for hospice couple months before April. And I had trouble moving him with the gentleman who was there for home health. And I was like, whoa, am I weak? You know, here I'm thinking I'm getting healed. I'm off my medication. And then I had a scan and they said, now you've got borderline osteoporosis. My numbers tanked, of course, from being sick. We want you on another medication. I said, absolutely not. And that's where I got a scare in me and I decided to hire a personal trainer. And I affectionately call her the boss. and she's 75 years old. She's never harmed me. I work with her 3 days a week, private session for an hour. And it is the best thing I've done for myself. You know, I went from, since I started training, when I came through, I was feeling good. I was feeling healthy. I feel fantastic. Unstoppable after working with her. And I'm older. I had a lot of workarounds, including a rotator cuff tear partial and a torn meniscus on the other side. And then my back, which was a disaster. I mean, a chiropractor won't even touch me and adjust me. That's how bad my back is. Wow. They're like, no, I'm sorry. And she's never hurt me. We worked slow. My weights were pretty next to nothing. But it really was important for me to have somebody, one, I don't know better. I want to push myself. But I wanted somebody to watch my form. And particularly because of my age as well, and somebody who just knew what was, you know, what I needed to do. And it is my absolute favorite relationship in the world. I can't wait to work out with her. She challenges me. She gets 5 more out of me. And she also tells me when, no, we're not doing 5 more. I don't like your form. Your body's tired. Stop. And it's absolutely invaluable. You know, I had if something were to happen to me now, I would trust one that I could get off the floor with ease, that I could roll over in bed. And if you end up in the hospital for a month or even a couple weeks at our age, I even notice it as much as I work out. And I leg press, I can leg press 265. I mean, I can do a lot. And I didn't start there slow, but, you know, I can, but on the biceps, I do 20s on each side. That's a lot for a woman my age.
That's really good. I don't even think I can do that much.
No, sure you can. Sure you can. We're actually about to start thinking about going to 25 pounds.
Yes.
For doing the singles. But, you know, I have to, I keep building stronger and know that, you know, even if I go on vacation for 2 weeks, I notice, you know, it takes me a couple of weeks to recover, but we lose a lot as we age. And I just want to be as fit and healthy as I can. I don't want to be hunched over and frail. I don't want, you know, I have friends that can't walk up a flight of stairs. And I don't want that. And so it is absolutely the most important thing. And so much so that I've had to back off a little bit. I still am prone to infection and I back off of my walking. And the other thing that I want to say, and I was thinking about it today on the way home from work. I work part-time. The first thing that goes on my calendar is my weight training sessions with her. My hair next. And as a matter of fact, I have to cancel my hair because she rescheduled. And you know, women, we like our hair done. But I just don't cancel. It's in there unless I'm sick or I'm out of town. It is the most important thing, my weight training, that I have on my schedule.
Wow.
Everything else literally works around it. And I book my schedule 3 months in advance with her.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Go ahead.
No.
You said a few interesting things in there that I think most people would maybe miss. Like you affectionately call her your boss, and you would think all personal trainers are whipping our clients and making them do more. But you said that also a lot of times a personal trainer needs to step in and limit you and say, whoa, 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 I know you want to do more now, but let's be prudent about this. The biggest thing we don't want to do is cause harm or cause some type of injury. So I think it's so important that she's doing that and stepping in and saying, no, we're going to stop here for today. And that's okay. The other thing that I think a lot of people miss is you said that this relationship between you, yourself, and your trainer is one of the most important relationships you have in your life. I don't think people really understand how close trainers get with their clients. You to us are family. Like we love you. We talk about you. We care about you. We program design and we feel it back from you guys. Like it's very quick when we start with somebody that's like, we have a new family member, somebody that we will go fight for and stand up for and want to work with. It's a pretty special thing.
It really is special. You know, next to my family, and she's like family now. And she feels the same way. You know, I also worked yesterday at the senior center or the day before, and she trains there. So that's where I found her. I wanted somebody who was going to be mindful, and she's walking down the hall and she looks up at me and she goes, I absolutely love you. And I said, oh, well, what prompted that? She goes, I just looked at you and I know I do. And I just needed to tell you, but you know, it really is special. You know, my first sit up, she pulled me up. I couldn't do a sit up with my back. And the very first, she pulled me up because my back has to get the movement before it lets me do it. My back's really funny. And it probably, you know, for a month or two, she's pulling me up and I can't do a sit up. And the very first sit up I did, my favorite story in the gym, she said, okay, well, let's just try one. And I did it on my own. And I had tears in my eyes and she had tears in her eyes. Because it was months I just couldn't, and my body got it. And I just was like beaming my very first sit up that we just worked on for months with her pulling me for me to try to get the movement. And, you know, that's what you go through when you're with somebody that you spend 3 hours a week. You know, you laugh, you cry, you know, you got a hug, you did it. It really is amazing. And especially being older, we need it more than ever. Because when you're younger, you can sort of skim by without it.
Yeah.
I mean, you really can't, but your body will let you skim by doing things. When you get older, it catches up on you pretty quick if you don't.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's really validating
to
know how we feel about our clients and to also hear from other people who use trainers that they feel the same way, because it is like that. We spend a lot of time with our clients and laughing and crying and all that stuff. We understand quite well. And I'm just curious for you, now that you seem to have this new lease on life, you're starting to reverse age. You look better and better and better, just like everybody else in this community. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
What's next for you? What are some of the things you're thinking about now that you're able to kind of dream?
Well, so one thing, I'm started a volunteer. I actually went through orientation and I was accepted. I never thought I'd be near a barn again or even ride again. And I'm volunteering at a therapeutic riding center. I'll start with mucking stalls and feeding and grooming. And if all works out, I haven't 100% decided. There's an element of risk. I'm not allowed to have hardware. Should I break anything? So I have to think about this. But of course, I can trip on my own 2 feet and break something. So I think I'm leaning towards riding again will be one. Definitely, I'll be back around horses. And I never thought that would be possible. Wow. Then I have in the fall, I'm hoping in the fall, I did promise my family, since I had a rough time this past winter. And last fall with recurrent infections, which is, I'm not 100% healed in my ear and happening every couple of weeks. I promised them that I would have quite a few months of that not happening and under control. But I was hoping for my 70th. If not, I'll do it next spring when the season opens up again. I want to walk the St. Francis of Assisi Trail. It's 800 kilometers or 500 miles. It takes about 40 days. You only have about 4 rest days, and actually I have no doubt I could walk it tomorrow, but I need the rest day, and I haven't found an organization. I don't want to do it solo. I want to do it with a group, but I haven't found somebody that does a weekly rest day. So I might need to just build up my immunity system a little bit more. So that's something that I want to do. And then after that, just enjoy life. You know, I cold swim, I go to the ocean, I appreciate the sunrises. I'm just grateful to be here. I just want to enjoy, you know, the time I have here and my days, just doing all the things that, you know, we take for granted that at one point I couldn't do that I can do now.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. We're so glad to hear about your gratitude. When I think about my client and her question that she wanted to ask to you, and you know, how can we explain this to people and let more people know? I think you and I have both figured out at this point, and a lot of people in our community have figured out that just going out and, you know, trying to convince people or tell people all these amazing things when they're not ready, it doesn't really work. But if we can, each of us, be a light, to be an example, to let our light shine, I think that's the best way that we can influence somebody. And I see you and your journey and your story and what you're doing on social media. I love to see your posts about your sunrises and the gratitude and the movement and all these amazing things. Like, that's what you're doing. And it's very inspiring and it's really, really special. And you deserve to have the rest of your life just be amazing, doing all the things you absolutely love. So I'm just so grateful for you, your journey. I'm so grateful we were able to connect and you had the time to do this today. Mimi, where would you like people to go to find you and connect with you and your work?
So I'm both on I'm on Twitter every day, Instagram I'm getting better, at least every other day, but it's still Mimi K. Morgan for both of them, and that's where you can find me, but always on Twitter.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, we'll link both of those. Congratulations on learning on learning Instagram. Instagram is really tough. I tease all the time that I think I think I need to hire a 14-year-old girl to like manage our social media for us, because Instagram's tough for me to figure out, and I still will never crack things like TikTok or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, well, good. Now you make me feel better, because I thought it was just me.
No.
Yeah.
We'll definitely join you on that one. It's not that easy.
Yeah.
That you have the passion to be able to learn things like that. It just, again, it shows me that you're out and willing to share your story to inspire others. And you certainly have done that today. So again, Mimi, thank you so very much for everything that you've done. And thank you for taking time to be on our show today. We really, really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me, Casey. It's been a pleasure. Really has. Thank you.
It was a pleasure, Mimi. Thank you. And this has been another episode of Boundless Body Radio. thank you so very much for continuing to listen to Boundless Body Radio. As 2023 has come to a close and we're starting another new year in 2024, I always try to reflect on not only the direction that we want to go in the future, but also how much we have grown in this last year. Our podcast has now generated well over 400,000 downloads from all over the world, and it's all thanks to fantastic listeners like yourself. I hope you are as excited for the new year as we are around here. The lineup of guests that we have coming up is absolutely staggering, and we're always striving to bring you the best content from the most amazing people in health, nutrition, and wellness. Remember that you can always head on over to our website to book a complimentary 30-minute session with us at myboundlessbody.com. On our homepage, there is a Book Now button where you can select a time to speak with us about your health and fitness plan, especially for the new year. We've absolutely loved chatting with so many of you out there to bounce ideas off each other and try to come up with plans to help you achieve specific goals. And seriously, I really do mean this. Even if it's just to say hello and introduce yourself, we absolutely love connecting with our listeners in the community. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel as well if you want to watch these full interviews and also shorter interviews on more specific topics that are taken from these interviews. We've gotten really great feedback over there, and it's also a really fun way to interact with people who comment. We read and reply to every single YouTube comment we get, so be sure to subscribe to our channel and leave as many comments as you like to keep the conversation going. And of course, if you haven't already, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to make sure that the podcast gets out to more listeners. Your 5-star ratings and reviews are the best way to support us here at Boundless Body, and to support the podcast at Boundless Body Radio really only takes a moment, and it's very meaningful to us. Cheers to 2024, and thank you again for listening to Boundless Body Radio.